time the wind blows puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago. It's time for Abandoned Manitoba, and Gordon Goldsborough joins us now. Good morning, Gordon.
Good morning, Nadia.
I'm trying to think of an artful way to ask this question, but we'll just go for it. What are we talking about today?
We are talking about toilets.
Don't turn off, though.
No. Well, and, you know, and I'm fully aware that, you know, this is something that probably most people don't talk about in polite company, but I have to say, we, you know, we certainly rely on them. I mean, who doesn't, you know, want a toilet? And a century ago, it was no different. You know, the city of Winnipeg understood that people needed toilets. And, well, they built underground toilets that they called, and I love this euphemism, comfort stations. Yeah, I don't quite know what, I mean, I guess I understand a little bit of what it means. But today, I think most people, if you said comfort station, I'm not sure they would really know what you were talking about. So this week, I'm going to offer people a rare glimpse into the world of comfort stations, as revealed by one of the MHS's researchers, Jordan Makachuk.
I think we need to revive this term. I find it delightful. Bring back the comfort station. So where were they exactly?
Well, I'm sure they go back further than this, but the ones that I want to talk about are the ones that Jordan had found, which I think are really quite architecturally beautiful. The first two of them were built in 1914, and they were on Portage Avenue. There was one at the corner of Portage and Fort, the other at the corner of Portage and Gary. And, you know, I thought, well, that's kind of weird. Why would they have two toilets so close together? Well, of course, if I thought a little more deeply about it, the answer might have come to me, but I did find the answer in a historical newspaper. Of course, as I'm sure some of our listeners are yelling right now, one was for men and one was for women. Okay, makes sense. The other two toilets, because there were four of them built around the same time, they were on Main Street at the corner of Selkirk and at the corner of Logan, and they were constructed in 1916, 2 years later than the first pair. But what's interesting, though, about the second ones is they were about a kilometer apart, and I first thought, wow, if that was men's and women's, someone's going to have to hoof it, you know, if they really needed to go. But they were larger in size, and I think that was the key for me, which said, oh, they were probably for both men and women. You know, in other words, two toilets separated about a kilometer, but you could use either one interchangeably.
And what do they look like?
Well, I've only seen photos of the ones that were built in 1916 on Main, and I'm assuming that they're probably very similar in appearance. Well, what they show is a rather small building, and you think at first, wow, how did they cram any number of toilets into that small space? Well, that's only because what you saw was the tip of the iceberg, so to speak. There was an entrance on the ground level, and it was made of bricks, and it had Tindalstone trim. It was actually a very attractive-looking building, but then immediately it would go down some stairs to an underground area where they actually had the toilets. In fact, over the entrance, I thought was interesting too. Even though everybody called them comfort stations, over the door it said public lavatory, which I think is pretty descriptive. You know, that's exactly what they were. We found architectural blueprints for the ones that were built in 1914. And again, I think probably the ones built later would be similar. The ones had seven toilet stalls, and then opposite they had two wash basins. They were all designed by the same architect, a visionary guy named William Bruce, and they were built by the same construction firm of Hazelton and Wallen. That would suggest that they were all very similar in appearance. They were designed by the same guy, built by the same company. They would have had a caretaker who was there for routine maintenance. And I found a newspaper story that talked about this, and it just amazes me. But actually, one of the very first problems they encountered with these public toilets was that they didn't have any heat. And okay, that's fine in July or August, but imagine going in there in January. Ooh, that would be terrible. They did actually make attempts to try to heat them. They had a gasoline-powered heater, but it proved very costly to operate. And so eventually, I think they were heated by a pipe that ran from the furnace of a nearby building, and that's what kept them warm in winter.
Now, you described the architect, William Bruce, as visionary. Why is that?
Well, anybody who's made a study of this guy, and I have, has come across all sorts of interesting details. So he arrived in Winnipeg in 1906, and having previously practiced as an architect in Edinburgh and Glasgow, Scotland, as well as London, England, he was known for grand ideas. So, for example, in 1912, he unveiled plans for a huge city at the mouth of the Churchill River on Hudson Bay. And probably people are going, oh, yeah, that's the town of Churchill. No, he actually dubbed it Roblin City, and it was named for Manitoba's premier at the time, Rodmond Roblin. And just to give you an idea of the grandeur of Roblin City, it would have a whole network of streetcar lines. No streetcar lines in Churchill today. 600 miles of streets, public parks, living space, and in fact, he designed it for a population of 500,000 people. You know, I mean, just mind-bogglingly huge. And, well, that same year, Bruce became the president of a company that championed the virtues of a new type of stone, a form of dolomite that he called Manitobite. Manitobite, because it had been found in a quarry in the Interlake. And so he tried championing it. He tried convincing, for example, the builders of the legislative building to use Manitobite in the Manitoba Legislative Building. Nope, they passed. Eventually, there apparently was at least one building with Manitobite. It's the Tier Building at the University of Manitoba's Fort Garry campus. There apparently is some Manitobite there, but, you know, I don't know much about it. Jump forward from 1912 to 1914, and Bruce made a presentation to the city government where he advocated for the construction of comfort stations, and he claimed to have made a very thorough study of them in Europe and the United States. Well, I guess that's something, given his background, he could do. And on the basis of the presentation, he was hired for the job to design ones for Winnipeg.
So what happened to Bruce's four comfort stations?
Well, the ones on Fort and Garry, the ones that were built in 1914, they closed together in 1949. And they were replaced the following year in early 1950 by a single comfort station for both sexes, in other words. And it was located on Garry Street on the site of the original one from before. The new one was very utilitarian in appearance. I've seen photos of it, and it's not that attractive at all. And apparently it was modeled after the entrances to subways in Chicago. And I thought, okay, that's kind of strange, but okay. Because when I first saw the picture of that, that looks like a subway entrance. And that's because that's what it was modeled on. The fancy new toilet on Garry, well, it barely lasted 30 years. In fact, I think it was only 29 years when it closed in 1979. The city of Winnipeg had determined that it was very costly to operate compared to how much it was being used. They had done a survey. Of course, why not? They found that the toilet had had about 250 visitors per day. That seems like a fairly large number. But what I found interesting is that three quarters of them were men. I don't know why the ladies didn't like to use the toilet, but they didn't. And of that number of men, 20% of them were transit bus drivers. And I thought, well, yeah, that makes sense. Because, of course, you're on a riding on, you're driving a bus. There's no place to go. So when you're close to the public toilet, you run in quickly. And I can just imagine what the passengers aboard the bus would be thinking. But the whole concept of public toilets seems to have become quite liberally fraught with controversy. Arguably the most contentious public toilet in Winnipeg's history sat in Memorial Park. You know, that's that green space immediately north of the legislative building here in Winnipeg. That toilet was built by the provincial government despite vigorous opposition from Winnipeg Mayor Steve Juba. He just hated the idea. And the other bigger opponent was, we might call politely, a political gadfly, Joe Borowski. And Joe argued that the public toilet would attract, and this is a direct quote, hobos and transients. Veterans were also opposed to the whole idea because they said, you know, having a toilet in a place that is intended to commemorate war dead, you know, that's just disrespectful. But despite this, all this opposition, the government soldiered on and persisted, and they built the toilet. And the argument was that, well, we just need a toilet. This area is underserved by toilets. And in any case, and this is the argument that they used at the time, every park needs a toilet. And if that's true, I have to say there are many parks around Manitoba where that is not followed, that advice. So there you go. The toilet construction cost about $100,000, which is a lot of money even today, but a lot of money in the 1970s. The above-ground entrance was clad in that signature stone, Tyndallstone. It was a very attractive looking building. In fact, it looked in some ways as attractive as those original ones from the 1910s. But like the earlier comfort stations, most of it was underground. Again, in other words, there was an entrance structure above ground, and you went down some stairs to use the toilet below ground. And it opened in late 1973, but, you know, I couldn't find any evidence that they had a opening ceremony. You know, and usually when there's some kind of government-built structure, they have some kind of ceremony, because, of course, politicians love their photo ops. I guess they just decided that, you know, maybe a public toilet wasn't going to be the photo op they would prefer. So, and I guess it never would be either.
So why was that?
Well, the toilet was described by some users, and this is a direct quote, grungy and damp. It became notorious for poor upkeep. They just didn't keep it tidy and neat and clean. It was really quite unhygienic, apparently. I never went in it. I should maybe clarify. I was never inside, so I don't really know for sure. But it also apparently attracted all sorts of illicit activities that are probably best left unsaid. And in fact, it was immortalized in song by the comedy duo of McLean and McLean. They wrote a little ditty called The Biffy on Broadway. Bruce, you're the musician here. I mean, do you recall a song by McLean and McLean?
Yeah, sing us a line.
Nope. No, I do remember, and I won't sing it.
Well, I tried finding lyrics online, and no sign of. So if any listener knows about the lyrics to The Biffy on Broadway, I'd love to hear about it. But if it's closed now. In fact, it's been demolished. It closed in 2006, so it's been gone 20 years.
But there is still a public toilet in Winnipeg?
Right. Yes, absolutely. In fact, the most recent incarnation opened along Main Street near Higgins in 2022, 4 years ago. It was a project of the architectural firm of Bridgman Collaborative, led by heritage advocate Wins Bridgman, and it aims to provide a convenient and, I would argue, respectful place for people to do their business behind closed doors, mind you, at least between the hours of 7 a.m. and 11 p.m. And, of course, my mind immediately asks, what do you do between 11 p.m. and 7 a.m.? But I guess that's the rub. And I think given Winnipeg's somewhat spotty record of closing public toilets, I have to wonder how long it will be before maybe this particular one's goal of being a permanent facility for the benefit of the city's most vulnerable residents may come out to not be.
Gordon, thank you for this.
Yeah, I say it's not a topic necessarily for polite company, but it's a necessary function. So why not?
What's coming up for next week?
Well, okay.
Dare I ask?
we're going to change gears considerably now. So, of course, we're facing the impending opening of the NHL season. And I'm hopeful that Jets fans are once again trying to convince themselves that this year will finally be the one when the Stanley Cup comes home. You know, hope springs eternal. And so next week, we're going to visit the site of a building in downtown Winnipeg that was home ice for a hockey team that did not just dream about the Stanley Cup, they won it 3 times over a century ago.
Looking forward to that. Thank you, Gordon.
Bye-bye for now. No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba, many moons ago.